FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and history, does it repeat itself? I'm not sure. What is the proper way to deal with history? Do you rip monuments down? Do you embrace the past? Or do you forget the past, suppress it, and go on with your life, with society? Well, those are interesting questions. First, as always, we urge you to join the discussion, the dialogue. That's what we're all about here at Financial Survival Network. Just send me an email, kl@carrielutz.com. So the person you're about to hear from, he's a former candidate for governor of the once great state of California. This is his eighth book, and it's Armstrong. And it's part of the Custer of the West series. His name is H.W. Crocker. H.W., welcome to the show.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
So you wrote this book and a lot of interesting things in it. But tell us about the series and what the message is you're trying to get out here.
Sure. It will be a series if the first book succeeds. All rests on this first book. But the first book, it takes a famous incident from American history, Custer's Last Stand, and it twists history slightly. It assumes that Custer is actually rescued from the battlefield. All of his men are massacred. This white woman who's been captured by a Sioux Indian made his squaw. She rescues him from the battlefield, and he survives. And through a series of misfortunes and adventures, he escapes with her, and he eventually becomes a marshal. But he's trying to clear his name. He has to work undercover with a different name because he feels this great shame of this one blot on his career, this one military catastrophe, and he wants to figure out who betrayed him so that that this happened, because Custer famously had the luck of Custer. He was never defeated in the battlefield, and he wants to find out what happened this time. So he becomes this undercover marshal named Marshal Armstrong. Marshal Armstrong, in fact. And he becomes this do-gooder out west, and he gets mixed up with all sorts of characters. And the book is meant to be a page-turning adventure story. It's supposed to be very funny. It's been a sheer entertainment, but throughout there are real tidbits of history. The character of Armstrong is very much like the real George Armstrong Custer. It's just that his traits, his personality traits, his experiences, actually his experiences are real, but the traits are exaggerated for comic effect. So for instance, George Armstrong Custer in real life was an incredibly courageous man who led from the front, who wore colorful uniforms, which could easily attract sharpshooters against him, but he did that to inspire his men. In the book, he takes it a little bit farther. George Armstrong Custer was famously devoted to his wife. He was a very handsome man. He was a flirt, but completely devoted to his wife, Libby. The book is actually set up as a sort of this long novel length, in fact, letter to his wife explaining what has happened to him. And it plays to that comic effect too, his devotion to his wife. But probably one of to my mind, the best parts of the book is that Custer was a little bit like, in this respect at least, St. Francis of Assisi, in that he had this tremendous rapport with and power over animals. He loved dogs and horses and just about every animal you can imagine. And he would keep them as pets all around his camp. And in the book takes that affection he had for animals, his ability to calm them and lead them, and plays it for comic effect. So the whole book is meant to be funny, exciting, but it does have a couple underlying important themes, one of which is just to recapture the sort of affectionate and, to my mind, truer memory of American history, which is not a litany of, as the left would have us believe, racism, sexism, genocide, all these horrible things because of slavery and Indian wars. And, you know, no, when I was growing up, it was about the conquest of the West. It was the winning of the West, how the West was won.
Right.
This book brings back that sort of spirit, which I think is the right one. And unless we have this sort of idea of America's history as a great adventure story, which I think it is, then I think we're going to self-destruct. You cannot have a country, a society based on the idea that, oh yeah, our founding was a criminal enterprise. And the way we conducted ourselves for 200 years was essentially as genocidal maniacs, you know, epitomized by men like Custer who just slaughtered Indians. That is not true to real history. That is not the actual American story. And I can tell you, and actually this is in the book, but he kills plenty of Indians in the book. He fights Indians. He was an Indian fighter. Those are his orders. But if Custer waged total war against the Indians, he had also previously waged total war against the Confederacy, against the South, in the Civil War. And yet, at West Point before the war, actually during the war, some of Custer's best friends were Southerners. He liked Southerners. He attended the wedding of a Confederate officer during the war, standing in as his best man, wearing his Union blue, while his former West Point friend was wearing his Confederate gray. I mean, he was very much a man of certainly after the war, reconciliation to a far greater degree. This is a man, a veteran of a war that killed 600,000 people, that was waged in part against civilians in the South. And yet he had this great spirit of reconciliation, which our monument destroyers today don't seem to have. And yes, he fought Indians, but also Custer loved his Indian scouts. And why? Because they lived like Custer liked to live. They liked to go riding and hunting and fighting, and that is what Custer liked to do. And Custer famously said, look, if I were an Indian, I would want to be on a reservation. I want to be out, you know, on the open plains, riding around, having a great old time. And that's, you know, he and his Indian scouts were very close. So it's just, the book, in a way, knocks down some myths. It reaffirms some old-fashioned truths about the West, about American history, about all sorts of things. But I hope it's basically, for most people, entertainment. And it also has this one other saving grace, I hope, which that it is a book that an adult can read. But frankly, it's also a book that you could pass on to teenage sons, daughters, grandchildren, because they won't get all of it. They won't get all the historical references. They won't get all the jokes. But they'll get enough of them. I think they can read it through fast and enjoy it and be ready for the next installment.
So Custer kind of gotten a bad rap from history because he did get massacred and all of his men did, of course. But there was a lot more to the character of George Armstrong Custer than just the Battle of Little Bighorn. And so one thing that that gets neglected by all these people who think we stole this from the Indians, and I call them Indians because that's what I grew up calling them, you know, the land was stolen from them. Yeah, they were mistreated, sure, but there were a lot of brutal tribes out there who were really murderous and really had no respect for life.
Yes, and the book talks about that too, because the you know, the Indians do definitely have their saving graces. And if you grew up when I grew up, you know, when you could play cowboys with Indians, a lot of people wanted to be the Indians. That was more fun.
Yeah.
But the Indian tribes amongst themselves were, and we don't need to generalize too much, but this is actually a generality, which is true, were always fighting amongst themselves. And in fact, the reason why Custer had Indian scouts serving him was because they came from tribes that had been abused by either the Sioux or the Cheyenne. So there was a lot of Indian tribes lived by fighting. So we shouldn't romanticize them too much. And Custer, you said, has been misjudged by history, at least by some. That is true as well, because Custer was always controversial. A guy who was as flashy as Custer was this cavalier, Errol Flynn type character, will inspire jealousy and will inspire criticism. But and Custer fed that criticism a bit because he was so flamboyant and because he famously graduated last in his class at West Point. But he did not graduate last in his class because he was stupid. He graduated last in his class because he was a prankster. And in fact, on the very day he was to graduate, or a couple days before, two cadets at West Point got into a fight. Custer, as an upperclassman, should have broken the fight up. But instead, he said, wait, boys, let's have a fair fight. And he refereed the fight. So because he refereed the fight, he got thrown in the brig, court-martialed. So while his class was graduating, he was facing trial. But he went straight from that being court-martialed to the front lines in the Civil War. And he was the boy general of the Civil War. He was the youngest brigadier general in the Army at the time, and was promoted at the age of 23. Right. And Custer was not only physically brave, he was a brilliant, partly instinctive tactician, strategist. He was he was born to be a soldier, and he was a tremendous soldier.
And so what the heck happened at Little Bighorn? I remember the movie Little Big Man, where Dustin Hoffman's playing his scout and more or less sets him up, says, there's 5,000 Indians above that hill, and they're going to massacre you, but you're not going to believe me anyway. But obviously that was a fictionalization. That wasn't what really happened.
Yeah,
Where did he go wrong?
Hate that movie. Because I think that movie is very wrong. And that movie betrays when it was made. I think it came out around 1970. And it's meant, and it's actually one of the, a wave of Custer criticism, because on the left, there was this idea that American's history is one of genocidal war against Indians and other peoples. So, yes, we wiped out the Indians, and then we just kept going across the Pacific to attack the Philippines and attack, at the time, those wonderful freedom fighters in Vietnam, in North Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is just completely not true, obviously. And so they portray Custer as this he's supposed to be like crazed representation of
homicidal
the American industrial complex. That's not the way it actually happened. Custer had two subordinate officers underneath him at Little Bighorn, or his chief major and a captain they were named Reno and Benteen. Reno was incompetent and was, after the battle, two or three times court-martialed. And he was finally kicked out of the army. And Benteen was a better soldier, but he also loathed Custer. He hated Custer and was always trying to say the worst things about Custer. And the Battle of Little Bighorn has been fought and refought a million times, because no one knows for certain what actually happened. Custer's men are massacred. There are no survivors. So, there are different theories about what could have happened. One of the arguments in the book is that Armstrong or Custer expects Reno and Benteen to come to his aid once they heard the fighting. And the fact is they did not, and that left him deserted when he thought they were going to have a three-pronged attack on the Indians at Little Bighorn.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things with Indian fighting is that one of the great risks from a soldier's point of view, if you're serving the U.S. Army, was that the Indians would run away. So even if you want to bring them to battle, you had to trap them. And this is one of the things that was running through Custer's mind at the time, we can presume, is that, aha, I finally tracked these guys down, and they're going to just run away unless I go after them right now. So, but he discovered mortally, it was the biggest Indian encampment anyone had ever seen. And we forget, too, I mean, there is a school of thought, large from the left, that Custer had it coming. Custer died for your sins, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. It's actually a tragic American story, a story we remember both for the heroism shown by the 7th Cavalry and the Custer, but also the tragedy of the event. Dying with Custer there at the battle were two of Custer's brothers who served with him, as well as his nephew, his young nephew, who was named after him, and his brother-in-law, who was known as the Adonis of the 7th Cavalry because he was an incredibly, incredibly handsome man. So this was really a family massacre as well as a massacre of a unit. Custer dies in his middle late 30s there, and his wife, Libby, lived to a ripe old age. She lived, I remember now, to around 1933. The battle happened in 1876. Wow. So she lives to be quite old, never remarries, mm-hmm. and writes two or three books about her life together with Custer. Her whole life is devoted to maintaining his reputation, enshrining his memory.
Kind of like Alexander Hamilton's wife. same thing there.
Yeah.
Interesting. So there's a lot more to this character than what has been painted as a quintessential, Indian killer, just kind of notorious and really just a publicity hog, and really just somebody who wasn't like a serious soldier, because that's what a lot of history has portrayed him as being.
Yes. Part of the trick with Custer, it's also seen in Teddy Roosevelt, is that Teddy Roosevelt and Armstrong are men who are sort of walking caricatures of themselves. Because Teddy Roosevelt has the big teeth, he's got the glasses, he has this rapid way of speaking, he's famously full of energy and whatnot, and you can make a caricature of that. So if you want to criticize him, you can say, as people did at the time, he's this overgrown boy. The president's about 12 years old, or whatever they would say. But in fact, of course, we know that Teddy Roosevelt, yes, he had some boyish spirits, but he was an extremely serious, well-read man who was also a part-time, at least, soldier. And Custer, too, can be easily caricatured because his long, flowing, blonde hair, his cavalier manner, and he really was like Errol Flynn in the movies. But that exterior hid a far more serious person. Custer was very relaxed before or after battle. He would banter with people. But when it came to actually in combat, and he talked about this, look, I have studied war so much that when I'm in there, all these things are running through my mind, and I just can rely, bang, on instinct. And that was true. Custer rose so rapidly because superior officers saw in him a man of dash, vigor, intelligence, a great eye for land and for the disposition of troops. And one of his patrons are actually famous men. One of the first men who spotted his talent in the Civil War was General McClellan, and put him on his staff. And among his early staff duties was actually going up in balloons during the Civil War to look over the enemy positions, which was incredibly dangerous because unless you're up there alone, you could get shot at pretty easily. But also during the Indian Wars, his main patron was Phil Sheridan, famous cavalry officer during the Civil War, who also loved Custer for all those same qualities. Now, even then, among the hierarchy of the Union Army, of the U.S. Army after the war, there were men who didn't like Custer. One of them was Ulysses S. Grant.
Yeah.
And Grant didn't like him in part for political reasons, because Grant was then president. He was Republican. His administration was dogged by corruption.
Right.
And Custer was out west criticizing the corruption of the men who traded with the Indians, one of whom was Custer's brother. Yeah. I mean, wasn't Grant's brother. So
right.
Grant had no great love for Custer.
Interesting. There's a lot more to Custer than meets the eye. And you wonder, where are the Custers of today? Who are they? Do they exist? Is he an anachronism? Or do they just keep coming up periodically? We've seen great generals in this country subsequent to it, obviously. They come and they're rare, they're leaders, and they have this sense of command, a sense of purpose, and their troops just love them and follow them. I mean, you could argue the current Secretary of Defense, General Mattis, he's kind of that type of character that we've seen come up from the past.
Yeah, there's a great line in a James Michener book that became a movie called The Bridges at Tokari. And in the movie, which I remember better, William Holden is a veteran of the Second World War who's called back to service for Korea. And he's married by now with kids. And he's a Navy flyer. And he ends up getting killed. At the end of the movie, there are these two officers on the ship. And one of them muses, where do we get such men? And it is sort of miraculous that when a nation goes to war, it loses lots of these great men. And you wonder how big the supply of such great men can be. But it is true that throughout our history, we've managed to bring forth these sorts of characters over and over and over again. And we can only hope and pray that that continues to be the case. I will say that just on a more comic note, that when President Trump announced this idea of creating a space force, I couldn't help but think Custer would be there.
Yeah.
You know, Custer loved horses. He loved the cavalry. Yeah. But boy, oh boy, give him a spaceship and a new uniform to design, I think he'd be all over that.
Yeah, I could kind of picture that. It's a great thing. Well, hey, it's been great having you on here. HW, just tell us, I assume we buy the book wherever fine books used to be sold. And right.
And yeah, the book is called Armstrong by H.W. Parker III. It should be on Amazon and down in Florida, and most of the country should be in most of your bookstores.
All right. And Amazon always. And take a look at it. It's a fascinating book. I'm obtaining a copy of it right now. So next time we talk to you, I can know all the ins and outs of it, because I'm fascinated by American history, fascinated by the subject. I'm fascinated by historical figures who've been misperceived or revisionist, had their best qualities removed through revisionism, which appears to be largely the case with Custer, based on what you've been telling us here. So we're going to find out more about this. Been great having you on. Hey, send an email to myself or HW. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. Don't forget Twitter feed @KerryLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. HW, great luck on the book. Thanks so much for gracing us with your presence, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thank you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.